former president just released a statement saying that the Biden administration must act immediately to end the border nightmare that they have unleashed onto our nation.
Former President Trump?
Yes.
We don't take our advice or counsel from former President Trump.
A lot of people got the vaccine because they were hearing him say, if you get the vaccine, you don't have to wear masks anymore. So,
and that continues to be CDC guidance.
And you can say that that's going to be the guidance forever.
I am not the CDC director.
I understand, but people don't care who tells them to wear a mask.
They should care. Shouldn't they care if it's a doctor or medical expert or a spokesperson? I think most Americans actually do care.
Why does the president support abortion when his own Catholic faith teaches abortion is morally wrong?
Well, he believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
Who does he believe then should look out for the unborn child?
He believes that it's up to a woman to make those decisions, and up to a woman to make those decisions with her doctor. I know you've never faced those choices, nor have you ever been pregnant.
You heard that right there. That last comment. Woo. Welcome, Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. My next guest served as White House press secretary during the first 2 years of the Biden administration and as White House communications director in the Obama White House. She now hosts The Briefing on MS Now, which airs nightly from Tuesday to Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please welcome for the first time to Straight Shooter, the one and only Jen Psaki. How are you, Jen? How's everything going?
I mean, Stephen A., that was really bringing me back there. It made me kind of want to be behind that podium again for a moment.
Right.
But yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Well, watching it, thinking about being there, what would the job be like for you now if you were at this White House as the press secretary?
Well, it's an entirely different universe right now. I listen to your show. I hear you call things out. I'm very caffeinated today, though I can try to keep up with
okay.
you here.
Sure.
Look, I think that when you have a president and you have an administration who is essentially gaslighting the American people on many days, most days, that does make that job challenging because the audience here is just Donald Trump. Caroline Leavitt's audience is making sure that her boss feels good about what she said. And when I was in that job for Joe Biden, I felt like my job was speaking on behalf of the government and yes, the president, and providing information to the American public. And this time it's like looking for a high five from the president. It's a very different job. And I think they've also remade the press briefing room in many ways to make it more like a room for propagandists. And that was not the case when I was there.
One of the things that I've marveled at on so many occasions, it's like the reporters look at the press secretary, they look at you all, and it's like they expect you to have all the answers. Like you can't sit up, it doesn't satisfy them that you're saying the president feels this way. Just like you was talking about President Joe Biden. Well, this is how he feels. It's mm-hmm. almost like you came a tad bit shy of saying to them, damn it, ask him. I just told you what the answer was. I mean, that's what you almost want to say. So I guess, I don't know. I imagine you've been asked this question, but I would ask, what is supposed to be the job of the press secretary? What is the American people supposed to expect from somebody standing in that position?
It's such an important question, especially right now. I mean, the way I thought about it was you're working for the president and you're working for the White House you're working in. And people care what you have to say because you're speaking on behalf of the person sitting in the Oval Office, not because they cared of what I, Jen Psaki, was going to wax poetic about on any given day. Right. That's not news. Mm-hmm. What's news is what the president thinks. But the president is working for the American people. The American people elected the president. So in that way, I saw the job as you're speaking on behalf of the president, but your job is really to provide information about what's happening in the White House, what's happening in the government, what the American people should really know about. And that was when I was there, there were a lot of things happening. And when I first came into the job, it was the height of COVID, of course. So we saw the role of that room as how can we provide more information and new information to the public. I used to bring a lot of experts into the room, people who were, Dr. Fauci came into that room and briefed the press on a regular basis. Jake Sullivan, who was the national security advisor, briefed him on a regular basis. Because it needs to be a room that's not for just the back and forth that's going to be shown on cable news, but one where people can learn something. Not every day does that happen, but that's really the goal.
Jen Psaki right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I got, you know, the president, he's obviously debunked or broken, you know, several Democratic norms, some would say. I'm wondering from your vantage point, what is one Democratic norm Donald Trump has not crossed yet, but you worry he could cross before the end of his term, this term?
I have a real concern about, and he hasn't crossed this yet, I guess, but I have a real concern about what resources he may try to use that are at his disposal in the government to mess with the elections, including the midterm elections. I mean, we can talk about 2028 and all of that as well, but we've already seen it. We've already seen dry runs of what he wants to try to do. Some of it is intimidation, voter suppression, you know, sending ICE officials out to communities and to areas around polling sites. That's a form, obviously a form of voter suppression. There are also efforts to make it harder to vote that I think, you know, even ending, and I don't know, is this crossing a Democrat, is this ending a Democratic norm? He's trying to change the law, I suppose, on being able to do mail-in ballots. That's something that has allowed more people to vote and participate in the process. So that's one of the areas currently that I'm quite concerned about, is what he may want to do, what he may try leading up to the midterm elections, which are really not that far away.
Jen, what level of culpability do you believe the left, the Democratic side of the aisle, should feel towards Donald Trump having returned to office? That's what, I mean, listen, I voted for one Republican. Contrary to these reports and the stuff that people put out there, I voted for one Republican in my life. That was Chris Christie, because I couldn't stand Corzine in New York, in New Jersey. That's it. That's the only person, that is the only Republican I've ever voted for. But I say all of that in all honesty, because I don't view Trump as somebody who's won the 2024 election. I view it as the Democrats having lost it. They blew it. They basically gift wrapped it to him with some of the decisions that they were made. I want to know, do you feel that that's the appropriate position to take? Is it an accurate depiction of what the Democratic Party did in terms of facilitating Trump's return to office? What are your thoughts about that?
I think there is a lot of self-reflection that was warranted, some of which has happened. And yeah, I don't disagree with, I don't know that I would say, I don't know how you just, I don't remember how you just framed it. I don't know that I would say that it's their fault, obviously. Okay. But the problem looking back at the 2024 election, and I remember, you know, I called the election for then MSNBC, now MS Now. Right. I was on the air for that. Is that there was this effort in the final months, or I think this is part of the issue, to you know, prop up, and I think Liz Cheney has done some amazing things and is incredibly heroic in a million ways, but there was this, we're going to use democracy as the primary thing we're going to communicate about. Now, preserving our democracy is a very important thing, but what we learned coming out of the election was that people had, in the country, writ large, not Democrats, not Republicans, a different understanding of what democracy meant and what defending democracy was. And it was quite split on that point, that question. And what I think one of the biggest mistakes, and this is where I think a lot of people were at fault, who are part of the big democratic system out there, people running for office, people who are consultants, all of that, people who are doing messaging, was not listening to a big swath of the base of the party that was saying, I don't feel heard. I'm suffering right now. I can't pay my bills. I don't think you're listening to me. You don't have answers for me. Your proposals are too small ball. They're not big. you know, there were things that Kamala Harris, that Vice President Harris talked about that were good. I mean, you know, I'm in the sandwich generation. You have parents who are aging, you have kids you're raising. That's a real thing a lot of people are experiencing. But then you start to call it the opportunity agenda and people are like, what the hell are you even talking about? Right. And a lot of people just didn't feel heard or didn't feel like they could identify with what they were seeing and hearing from the Democratic Party. It was a little bit like a lot of people lost the thread of what they should be talking about. And people were a little bit fearful about going into communities where people disagreed with them. Now, I think that has changed a little bit, which I think is a very good sign. And if you look at how a number of people have won over the course of time, and I mean different kinds of people. I mean, when Senator Warnock won, he won in part by showing up in parts of Georgia nobody expected to see him, that had been won by 80-something percent of by Republicans in the past. I will say, having worked for Barack Obama for 10 years, when he ran for the Senate, he showed up in deeply white rural parts of Illinois. People were like, what's he doing here? And then you know what happens? He starts talking about how he had two daughters, and he could relate and people can connect in that way. So I think there were a lot of mistakes made, a lot of things that I think self-reflection should be done about. A little bit of, sometimes I think Democrats talk a little bit like they're in an ivory tower academic Harvard class. Look, I didn't go to Harvard. I don't begrudge anyone who did, but
coming across like elitist when you're accusing the other side of being that way.
It comes across as elitist and like you're not invited to be a part of my conversation. And so those things are all true. And I think if you lose everything, you have to spend some time and reflect on what went poorly. So I do think there's been self-reflection. I'm really interested to see how it applies moving forward into 2028. I mean, 2026 and the midterm elections will be very interesting as well. And there's so much excitement. There's crazy amounts of money that has been raised. We just saw new numbers today. There's so much excitement out there. But I think until we see like the field of people running for president and how they're approaching that, we're not going to see entirely if all the lessons have been learned.
Well, the thing about it, and when listening to you, you know, I'll put it a different way, and I've raged about this for months now. I said what really resonates with me, whether it's 2016 or 2024, is that I saw an electorate on the right that had DeSantis thrown in their face, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, and various others, and they said, "To hell with all of y'all, we want him," meaning Donald Trump. Whereas, with the exception of Barack Obama, the Democratic Party has been about, no, this is our person, you all jump on board. So it comes across as one side that's listening to the people and another side who's compelling the people to listen to them. And that's the side that lost this last election. That's how I view it. To that, can you say what?
Yeah, one thing I would say, though, in 2020, there was a big primary, right, in the Democratic side. There were a lot of people who ran for president. Some people emerged we had never heard of before. Pete Buttigieg, right? Never heard of that guy before. All of a sudden, he was winning Iowa. And Joe Biden emerged from that. Now, I will say that tells you what people... Now, why did he emerge from that? I think he emerged from that in part because his message, and we can talk about 2024 and the Biden aspect of it, of course, if you want, but his message was more aligned with where the base of the Democratic Party has been and was on the economy and raising the minimum wage and fighting for affordability issues. Mm-hmm. That was what he talked about and what he was focused on. And he beat out a lot of our people. But yeah, there are too many times. This doesn't just happen in presidential politics. This has happened also on Capitol Hill forever, where it's like, if you've waited your turn and you're 89, you can be chair of the committee. And finally, they've thrown that out a little bit. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, look, there are... Robert Garcia is now the ranking member on the House Oversight Committee. That is, turns out, hugely important committee, even if you're not the chair of the committee. He's young, he's active, he's aggressive. That can't be somebody who's 85 in that job, or 90, or whatever, you know? And I think they're starting to throw it out a little bit, but yeah, that needs to be thrown out. It's not. And also, youth is what people are looking for right now. We know that from basically every poll, every time you talk to voters out there.
considering the news over the last couple of days, particularly involving Representative Eric Swalwell and what has happened in California, you know, I mean, he was going to get booted out anyway, but at least he resigned. At least he stepped away. He needed to. And he's got himself in a world of trouble. There is no doubt about that. I wanted to know, number one, how do you feel about that situation? And number two, what kind of effect, if any at all, do you anticipate that will have on the muscle and the manner in which the Democratic Party is able to flex its muscle as the midterms approach? Because obviously he was one of those loud voices out there very much against Trump.
Well, first I felt sickened by it. And it felt, you know, and I was talking to my colleague, Ali Vitale, about this, who covers Capitol Hill. You kind of feel like, wow, you know, I feel fortunate to have a platform. Should I be doing more to figure out who these other creepers are out there on Capitol Hill? And you know there are some more, right? I don't know who they all are. So, and you feel for, you know, I got involved and worked in public service because I very much believe that government can make people's lives better. And I want more people to want to be a part of public service. And it feels sad and sickening that this is what people who are in college or in the early 20s are seeing about the kind of behavior that happens on the Hill. I do think, and you said this, it's a good sign that he resigned so quickly. I think to the credit of the Democratic Party, and I don't know who knew what when, and I think there are some important questions about that need to continue to be asked and pressed on. But, you know, they pushed him out. They were not going to tolerate that he was going to be there. You know, you have a Republican member of Congress who resigned yesterday as well. Gonzalez, exactly, who was having completely inappropriate relationship with one of his staffers, who ended up tragically killing herself. That took weeks, and that wouldn't have been pushed out. I mean, the system, unless there's political pressure, is not set up to actually kick people out who do inappropriate things in Congress, because the ethics committee investigations just take too long. And that's what he was betting on. And other people are going to bet on that, too, unless there continues to be public attention on it and questions. And that also requires people speaking out. And that's a really difficult thing to do.
Jen Psaki from MS Now, right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. You know, getting back to this White House, this administration, and what they're going through, they're going through a different problem. And that is the right turning against Donald Trump, the Megyn Kellys of the world, the Tucker Carlson's of the world, the Candace Owens of the world, Alex Jones, not that I want to quote him or anything, but damn it, you know, that it's significant because that base definitely supports Trump. What does it mean from your vantage point to see that stuff becoming a bit more fragmented by the day in terms of the support, the cult-like following that Donald Trump once had? Do you believe it's all a smokescreen and it'll subside and they'll get back to normal because it'll be all about being against the Democrats? Or do you believe this is real and this is something that could potentially harm the GOP in the midterms and Trump overall?
Well, what's interesting, and a big part of what, and you know, Theo Vaughn, there's a couple people, Joe Rogan, and who's not exactly like a Republican, but like, you know, people who have been sympathetic and supportive of Trump in certain ways in the past. It's interesting because a lot of what has broken a number of them over the last several weeks is, of course, the war that Trump started. That is a place where the public, I think the recent polls show like 55% are very much against it. If you ask questions about more specific aspects, it's even higher than that. Now, what's also true, though, is that still a large percentage of MAGA voters are still with Trump on the war. Now, are they with Trump because they think the war is a great idea, or they're just with Trump because they just are going to be with Trump no matter what? Right. I mean, it's hard to kind of untangle that question.
Right.
But I do think that what it's a sign of, you know, last week, Megyn Kelly had this moment. You may have played it, actually. I don't remember. You tell me, where she was saying, can you just be normal? You know?
Yeah, I played it last week.
It's like, why do you have to? I played it, too, I think. It's like, why do you have to behave this way? And I think that is what a lot of people are feeling. And when you compound a couple of the things we've seen, I know you talk about a lot of these things. It's like the war in Iran, where there's no clear end, there's no justification. We've already lost soldiers. Also, the gas prices are the highest they've been. And like, what are we, what is even happening here with negotiations? People are justifiably pissed off about that. Then you have Trump picking a fight with the Pope, right? And also you have a number of people, which is disgraceful and disgusting, depicting himself as Jesus. You know, you have Mike Johnson and J.D. Vance essentially echoing him. I mean, I grew up Catholic. I have not, and I have a family in Cincinnati that goes to church all the time, I will say. But, you know, these are not the type of comments that are going to sit well with people who have been a base of supporters, which includes people who are of Catholic faith, the military, people who are members of the military, who are still going to have questions about why we're fighting this war. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see these big MAGA talking head types out there and kind of breaking with Trump. We haven't seen yet in the MAGA base itself that massive break, but we have seen in the public breaks for a variety of different reasons, including, you know, the war and picking a fight with the Pope and using religion as justification for going to war.
Couple of questions left before I let you get on out of here. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Number one, decipher the difference for the average listener and viewer out there between the MAGA right and how it comports itself, and the extreme progressive left and how it chooses to comport itself, particularly when they're dealing with issues pertaining to Trump.
You may have to tell me a little bit more about what you're getting at here. I mean, go ahead.
I'm saying is to this. I think that these folks that follow him, it's like a cult-like following. There's no doubt about it. But yeah. I also think the other side is so extremely against everything he is, everything he represents, everything he stands for, everything he does, that sometimes their lack of objectivity is so flagrant, you're not really, I'm not talking about you, of course not, but they're not really reaching anybody because people see it as two sides of the same coin. If you're in the middle, if you're an independent like me, okay, you're thinking along the lines of, you're no different than the other side. You just have a different belief system, but you're just as fervently against the other side, and sometimes a bit more vitriolic than you need to be at times. That's how I find myself feeling. That's where I'm getting at.
Yeah. Look, I think there are times. I think a lot of people on, and I can't speak for everybody on the left. I don't agree with everything everybody says on the left either. You know, sometimes it's not constructive. I mean, you've talked about the 25th Amendment. I have no issue with people saying they're for invoking the 25th Amendment, but it's not going to happen. So it's like, why are we spending so much time? You know, so that's not what you're talking about here. What I would say is that I think for a lot of people in the Democratic Party, or people who don't even consider themselves members of the Democratic Party, whatever that means, people out in the country who might consider themselves progressive, it's like, it feels like their entire identity is being questioned and challenged by Trump and many things in the Trump administration. Maybe because they're an immigrant or from an immigrant family, right? Maybe they're trans, or maybe they know somebody who's trans, maybe they're any of these things. So it feels very visceral and raw and real. And I understand that. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. What is also true is that in order to win, you have to invite more people to the party. So if you want to win, you have to accept sometimes that there may be people who are part of your party, or you're going to welcome into the event or the conversation, who you don't agree with on 100% of issues. And I think sometimes there can be a little litmus testy feeling about like who's allowed to be a Democrat or who can consider themselves progressive. And part of that goes hand in hand with like, you have to scream at the top of your lungs about everything that comes out of the Trump administration. And I'm outraged by a lot of it, but I don't think screaming at about every single thing is the most constructive thing. I think the difference, and I want to separate like the people from like the representatives, is
understood.
That, you know, there is a I think from the lemmings who follow Trump, who are in the Republican Party in Congress, you know, there is a willingness to follow him and abide by what he says and calls for and does that isn't even aligned with their own values and views. And they are giving over their power as a separate branch of government. And I'm talking about Congress and also the Supreme Court at times, because of like loyalty or fealty or whatever it means, fear of him impacting their political well-being. That is incredibly dangerous too. But I don't think that there is, that representatives on the left are all faultless at all either. You know, I think you have to find and be willing to invite people in and crack the door open. Otherwise, you're just going to be your small party where you're just agreeing on everything together. It's not how you win talk.
Very last question for you. You're an expert in communications, who, by the way, is doing a fabulous job on MS Now. You do a great job. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you for that. I hope you're going to come on and talk to me sometime.
Anytime you invite me, I'll be there. I'm happy to come on. It's not a problem. I'll be there. I have to ask you this before I let you go. If you have to, you're going to be communicating with a lot of Democrats mm-hmm. in the next few months and over the next couple of years. What are you going to tell them about what it takes to win, meaning regaining at least one House of Congress for the midterms and potentially, whether it's J.D. Vance, it's Marco Rubio or somebody else, reclaiming the White House? What are you going to tell the Democratic Party they absolutely positively need to do and what they absolutely positively need to avoid doing in order to make that happen?
Oh, man. First of all, this is the last question. Some other time we'll have to go through everyone who may run, and I have my own thoughts and advice for probably each of these people. But I will say this. I think a couple of the lessons learned, and this is pretty broad, I should say, you got to show up where people don't expect you. Don't just be going to friendly audiences. I don't mean, so that means, go on podcasts where people disagree. I used to do Fox News all the time because, one, I found it fun. Two, that's they have a huge audience, still do. You got to acknowledge that. Like, we're living in the land of reality here, right? There are people who do that and are willing to do that, and I think that's a good thing. The other thing I would say is don't worry so much about what the polls tell you about messaging, right? Because the thing is, polls are imperfect. They're capturing a moment in time. And also, it's very hard to reach, and they're making a bet on who the electorate is. So it's hard to reach people even through the polling system. And sometimes politicians or people running for office feel like they have to stay within a very certain way of talking about things. And the point is, you come across as inauthentic. So instead of doing that, sit down right now, everybody who's running for office, everybody who may run for president, go through every tough issue and decide what you think about that issue before you worry about what the polling says. Start there, figure out how to talk about it. That is authentic, that is real, that is leadership. The last thing I would say, there's probably a million things, but just the last thing on my mind about this is you got to hire people who are going to tell you what they think. And you don't always have to agree with them. You're the candidate or you're running for president, you got to decide, but you don't hire a bunch of yes men and yes women, because you need people who are going to be straight with you, direct with you. And I think sometimes, it's harder to find, but that's an important part of it.
The author of Say More, the host of The Briefing with Jen Psaki, the one and only Jen Psaki right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. It is such an honor and a privilege to have you. You're wonderful. I watch you every chance I get. I really appreciate your work, really appreciate you. And know that you're welcome back anytime, and I will be happy to come on your show once the invite is extended. Thank you so
much. Stephen A., I'd love that. Thanks for having me.
All the best to you. Take care. Jen Psaki right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. More of that to come in a minute. Your calls and then some. She does a great job. No question about it. Reasonable. Yet highly intelligent and accomplished. Can't ask for better than that. You really, really can, okay? Listen to her words because they make a lot of damn sense. More with Straight Shooter with yours truly in a minute. It's Stephen A. in the house, Straight Shooter style.